Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and John O'Bacon, episode 83 for August 22nd, 2009, Web Comics. This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free Libra, open source software, and comedy with John O'Bacon. He's the comedy. And also community director for Ubuntu, and Mr. Randall Schwartz. He's pretty funny himself. And the reason we're being comedic is we're going to talk about web comics on the show today, which is a great kind of departure for us.
Indeed. I mean, not that there's ever been any comedy in this show before. I mean, really, it's just been a serious show up until episode 83. But, you know, it's I thought maybe we want a little change. But before we get to that, let me handle a couple of quick pieces of old business. On last week's show, we were talking with Michael Ford, who talked to us about Iron Python for a good long interview.
And it turned out he was an imposter.
It turns out that I mischaracterized him. I had gotten the impression from reading his bio and from sort of looking at materials around him that he was one of the key developers actually working for the Iron Python project. But as he made clear in the interview, which I must have missed while I was staring down at my notes for a second, he's not on the actual Iron Python team. You have to work for Microsoft to be on the actual Iron Python team. So he would be to Iron Python what I am to Perl, which is, I write about it, I teach it, I have a company built up around it, but I'm not actually one of the core Perl developers per se. I'm not putting code into the actual release. I'm sort of working around the outside. So in that sense, Michael Ford was a perfect person to talk to because he was all about all the rest of that stuff, but he's not actually on the Iron Python team. And I got a couple of bad tweets and some nasty email about that. So I just wanted to make
from whom? From Microsoft?
I can't say. I don't want to say.
Okay, well, we clarified that.
I just want to clarify that, and I'm sorry. I apologize for mischaracterizing him. He's not actually on the Iron Python team. He just talks a lot about it and makes money using it and all sorts of things. And it was a great interview last week, but I'm sorry I mischaracterized him, at least in the opening.
But he uses it with resolve.
Every day.
Like
I use Perl every day. Yeah. So he obviously knew what he was talking about, but it was a great interview, but He doesn't speak for the team. He doesn't speak for the team. He's not a Microsoft employee. So I just want to make sure that was clear there. The other thing is, I did hear you talk about Rhodey on MacBreak Weekly.
So I love it. Thank you for that great suggestion. And we were talking about the very expensive commercial GPSs. TomTom's now out for $100.
I know.
And I said, well, excuse me, but Rhodey's a couple of bucks. It does a really good job. This is the one based on OpenStreetMap.
Exactly. And again, it's just been great, the feedback we've gotten on the OpenStreetMap show and on the stuff that's been happening since then. I think we failed to mention during the show that it was actually the exact 5-year anniversary when that show went live. So we timed it perfectly for the kind of stuff that we were doing. It's very cool. And also, I've been running around. I've been actually, I was going to say this out loud, but I was trying to do it without getting a laugh. But I've been tweaking my dongle.
John O'Bacon is also here. Anything you'd like to add to that, Jono, before I cut Randall off?
I might cut his dongle off.
Yeah.
Slightly concerned that you bring me into the conversation when we're talking about Randall's dongle.
Well, I thought somebody expert on this should weigh in.
Yeah, I am the webmaster of randallsdongle.com. One-stop shop for everything Randall dongle related.
So, moving on, you tweaked your dongle, did you?
I actually had realized that I've got the WBT-201, which a lot of people have asked about, so I'll say it again, the WBT-201. It's a standalone GPS recording device, and I take it out with me every day. And it turns out I was actually recording tracks that were too coarse to actually use with OpenStreetMap. So I actually went in and told it to record points a little more frequently. So if you are looking to do OpenStreetMap work, be sure that you have a fine enough resolution on your recordings to make sure that you can actually see precisely where the streets are going instead of having like diagonal lines cutting across corners and things like that. So I just wanted to pass it along to you because it was a useful piece of bits there. So
excellent.
Excellent. There you go. So I think that covers all the old business I have. Jono, do you have any old business? Your book just came out, right?
Oh, look.
Yeah.
Oh, look.
Yeah. I'm very excited. So those of you watching on the live stream can see it here. So The Art of Community has just been released. It's on its way. It's actually just been printed, so it's on its way to bookshops right now. And it's also available on Kindle and ebook, various ebook formats. I'm really, really stoked it's out there and finally people can start reading it. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Very, very happy.
Well done, gentlemen. So, Randall, tell us who... We've got a big cast of characters on the show.
We have the largest panel we've ever had on Floss Weekly, counting Jono as the co-host. We have three guests. They're all very well-respected and funny guys from their respective areas. We have...
I think Jeff just lost it, so I don't know if respected...
respected.
That's the right word.
We have... Let's quickly run this down so we can bring them on. We've got Jeff Darlington, who draws the General Protection Fault comic. 10 years in the making, I tell you. That's really a huge number of strips to for me to have to go back through and review in the last week. We have also Chris Wright, who draws the Help Desk comic series. And we have Chris Kohler, who is the webmaster for the Kevin and Kel website and probably other things related to Bill, what's Bill's last name?
Bill Holbrook.
Thank you. His stuff. So they've all agreed to be on today to talk about specifically how open source is used in doing what they're doing every day, but also sort of the general, how has open source affected the way, the way they're looking at their comedy material and things like that. So the problem I'm going to have is I'm going to be having my finger here on the mute switch because I have a feeling I'm going to be laughing far too hard through this show.
So who's been doing this longest? Jeffrey, how long have you been doing this?
Well, GPF is in its 11th year right now, but both Bill Holbrook and Chris Wright predate me by a number of years.
Really? So. How long, Chris?
I started 14. In 19. 19-
oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, which Chris?
There's two Chrises. We're going to have to work this out here. I don't know how we're going to do this.
I call them Thing 1 and Thing 2.
Kohler, how long have you been doing that?
Bill started September 4th, 1995.
Yeah. And wow, that's so a long time.
Probably the longest. It's almost 14 years.
Wow,
now.
That's a long time. And Chris, how long have you been doing this?
Yeah, mine started in 1996, and I actually got the idea from seeing Bill Holbrook's comics on CompuServe. So
CompuServe, wow,
great.
Wow.
Yeah, that's where it started, actually. It actually began life on CompuServe and then quickly moved over to the web.
So that was Kevin and Kel?
Right.
Okay.
It's kind of one of the first web comics. It's probably the longest consecutively running web comic.
Wow. And do all of these comics deal with geek material? I mean, is it, does being on the web mean that you have to be, kind of talking the culture, the web culture?
No, there's lots of different genres out there. You name a genre, there is a webcomic out there for it.
Yeah, yeah. Kevin and Kel, is pretty not aimed towards the geek.
Well, no, I mean, when Bill started the comic strip, he wanted to, he wasn't really targeting for any particular audience, but because it was a debuting on CompuServe and it was one of these first handful of web comics, he certainly was interested in the technology side of things and trying to bring that into the storyline. And it does play a pretty significant part of the storyline. Even the main character, Kevin, actually runs an ISP out of his basement. But no, I'd have to agree that web comics is just a medium like most. And so you'll find things that are fantasy or sci-fi or whatever.
I'm looking at the very first Kevin and Kel from CompuServe. It looks like he scanned in a pencil sketch, by the way.
Yeah. When it began in CompuServe, it was a five-day-a-week comic. It was all in black and white. He's a traditional comic strip artist. He's actually been doing comic strips for about 25 years. And he has two others that he does. I know it's kind of he's a workhorse.
That's prolific. Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't think of one joke a day, let alone three or four.
Yeah, he's the Leo Laporte of web comics, I guess.
Oh, don't do that to him. So this is interesting. So this is the very first one. In fact, this is on the page. If you go to kevinandkel.com, he's sitting. Is that Kevin, the big bunny?
He's a big, burly, 6-foot-tall bunny. Yeah.
He's saying, "Why am I doing this, Daddy? When you became an online forum sysop, did you know you'd be sitting in front of a computer all day? Dear, are you going to be eating here or at the table with the rest of us? Kevin, as your stepson, I was wondering, do you feel like a bum because you work at home? I know you're working, but could you come unclog the garbage disposal? Daddy, did you know most of the neighbors think you're unemployed? Frequently asked questions. Honey, when are you coming to bed? Yeah, that's good. I like it. That's pretty funny. And it's still topical, although we don't call them online sys forum sysops anymore.
I think the whole idea of going all the way back to CompuServe already dates this pretty big.
Yeah, yeah. So that's interesting. Yeah, now it's in color, by the way, now. And we should go back to KevinandKel.com on the front page. You can see it's same characters, but they're very colorful.
Yeah, in June 2000, it was a five-day-a-week black-and-white comic strip, but then in June 2000, we made the switch to 7 days a week, full-color with full-size Sunday strips. And like I said, the guy's a workhorse. He's been doing it nonstop, and so every day since that day till today, there's been a new comic on the web, all for free.
And
so what's the profit model for that if he's putting it all in for free?
Well, you know, he's gone through a few, and I think most web comic artists, I think, would agree that there's no one way to make money at this. It's very difficult.
Or, in fact, no way to make money at it.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, when he first started doing it, it was early enough that he thought maybe he could use the same model he used in his paper comics. So he was looking at trying to syndicate it. He actually had, I think, at one time, like 50 CompuServe forums all carrying it, and they were paying him a monthly fee for it. But then, you know, CompuServe was dying out. This is the time that the web was really starting to explode, and he tried to bring that same model to the web. Wasn't really going to work. You know, we got some websites to sign up for it, but not very many anymore. I think most web comics, they really kind of depend on the generosity of their readers to support them. So it's either through donations or patron programs.
Is that how you're doing it, Chris Wright?
Well, I don't really expect to turn any kind of profit off of my comic. I started it as an editorial piece for an old web magazine called OS2 eZine. When I first got interested in computers, the operating system I used was OS2, and I was one of those fanatics that championed the cause of the OS2 operating system right up until IBM put a bullet in its head. And I created my comic basically to editorialize on things that I saw happening in the computer industry. I generally have a very dim view of the computer industry in general. And that's putting it mildly. So this is basically my forum to rant with very static images. And I never really thought that there was any good way for me to make money off of it, because I'm really not that good at self-promotion, and my art is, I'm going to put it mildly and say, subpar. So there's not really a revenue model for me.
You do a couple of things I note right on the webpage. First of all, it's Creative Commons, attribution, non-commercial, share alike, which is the same license we do our stuff in. So that kind of pretty much precludes you ever making any money from this, right?
Well,
facetious, obviously, but
I could print books if I could ever figure out how to fit that presentation format on a page.
Right. Then I noticed that you do something really interesting, which is you have a transcript below the illustrated comic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I didn't for a long time, but I wanted all of the comics to be searchable, and they're static images. They don't really get collected very well. So I use Drupal as my CMS, and I just noticed a little HTML problem that you've highlighted with this.
As I zoom in, there's a little.
Right.
Yep.
But I've got a module that allows me to add a transcript at the bottom of every comic. And so every time I post, I do that so that the text is searchable.
Looks like you've gone back, because this is your very first one, 1,753 comics ago.
Wow.
Yeah, it took a while to do.
Yeah, wow.
Now, is the text that's down there, is that the source text that you pasted into the comic itself, or did you hand letter the comic and then type the text later?
Oh, no, I don't hand letter. I don't. I barely hand draw. I am a big fan of object-oriented cartooning. I But basically, I type everything in. I use Inkscape to create the comic, and I use the GIMP to crop it and to mess around with the color palettes, and then it goes up. And then essentially, I type everything in over again because sometimes it helps me find typos.
This is great, Jeffrey. Tell us about your process. How are you working?
Well, excuse me. I do GPF entirely on my computer. I've actually got a tablet PC that I flip it around and actually draw on the screen.
That's neat. So you're drawing, really, but it's just on the screen. Yeah.
Some people say that I actually can draw. Some people believe them.
No. You can draw, Jeff.
Yeah. Well, I've had people tell me I can't draw, so...
Your early ones were drawn on paper, though, and then scanned, right?
Actually, yeah. And, Leo, you might want to go back to the beginning of the archive. Poor planning on my part. That's a guest strip that you're seeing there.
Ah, all right.
But
let's go all the way back. Because, so whoever did that could draw the female form quite well, I noticed.
Randall is correct. When I did start GPF, I did draw. It was kind of half analog, half digital. I would draw the line art on paper and then scan it in and then do the text and the coloring and cleanup and stuff like that. Now I do the entire thing on my tablet PC and flip the screen around and draw on it.
And last year was your 10th anniversary doing that.
Yeah, last year was my 10th anniversary.
Congratulations, so, that's neat.
Thank you. Yeah. There's almost 3,000 comics, and most of that time, GPF was daily, at least 6 days a week, or a big chunk of it, 7 days a week. So,
where do you get your ideas from?
Anywhere and everywhere. I like to subscribe to the philosophy that all hardware sucks, all software sucks, and everything... is worth making fun of.
Yeah, you can't
do you
go
carry
far
a little
wrong
notebook around with you to try to figure out, like, if you get an idea, you just write it down right away, or just remember it till the end of the day, or what's your process for that?
No, I'll occasionally take notes. I've got my trusty Trio with me just about everywhere I go, so I'll take notes in there, and when I get home, I'll move them over to a script file, which I use OpenOffice at home. To maintain my scripts and my continuity spreadsheet. You know you're a geek when you do a continuity spreadsheet.
I didn't even know there was continuity in Wiz comics. I'm very glad. So you don't
actually
want,
that's one of the sorry to interrupt you, Leo.
No,
that's one of the great things about a lot of web comics is traditional newspaper comics, usually they're so isolated from day to day.
Right.
Just because you wanted anybody to pick it up and be able to read a comic and enjoy it. Many web comics, though, have continuity. And I'll tell you, if you actually read the latest GPF comic in the story, there is literally 10 years of backstory to go back to.
Wow.
Everything from time machines to alien invasions to alternate universes and sentient slime molds. So, if you start at today's strip, you'd be totally lost. You need to go back and read those 3,000 strips to really get what's going on.
Yeah. Well, and also that probably speaks a little bit to how different the geek audience is. I bet your audience is paying closer attention than Doonesbury's audience is.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So continuity becomes very important when you've got a guy saying, well, on episode 432... he had 4 buttons on his shirt. I see now he has 3.
I learned a long time ago. I go back and reread previous strips to make sure I get continuity straight and stuff like that. And in some of those cases, how many buttons does somebody have on a shirt? Because somebody's going to point it out if I get it wrong.
And how many fingers? 3 or 4? Yeah.
Do you get technical? Do you get email? Any of you guys? Do you get email from folks saying, well, technically, that computer couldn't possibly do that because it wasn't invented.
I once wrote a joke where the punchline was, dudes, we seriously dereferenced a null pointer here. And in the book, I had to redo the strips and typed it wrong and I said referenced a null pointer. And so I got a bunch of mail from people saying, well, you know, if you reference a null pointer, it's not a problem. Because you can reference any pointer, but if you dereference a null pointer, then you're talking about memory corruption.
And whatever you do, don't jump to a null pointer, because that's going to be bad.
That's funny. That's really great. I think, though, that's, and I'll tell you, as somebody who's worked with a geek audience for almost my entire career, I love that audience because they care so much. They're so involved. Mm. Yeah, it could be challenging, but boy, wouldn't you rather have an audience that's paying attention than one that's just kind of scanning through the paper and maybe catches what you're doing? I mean, that's part of the pleasure of it.
I talk about my audience as, you know, several thousand editors in chief.
Yeah.
They find the problems before they go to the book, so...
Yeah, Bill has a pretty unique view on it, too, because he does two paper comics and a web comic, so he sees both sides of it. He will see the... one of the reasons he wanted to do an online comic when he did was because it was something that allowed him, just like Jeff said, to tell much longer storylines. You're not limited to just this week's little story arc. And the geek culture is great, too. I mean, they really feel passionately about the characters.
Have you been working with Bill since the beginning?
I actually joined up with Bill about 2 years after the comic strip had started. I discovered it in like 97 and ended up working with him in 98.
Did you become his, like geek reference source?
No, not so much. Bill, you know, there's a lot of technology in Kevin Kell, but it's not quite as deep as what Jeff and Chris do in their comics. It's more kind of the kind of stuff everybody's familiar with. And when it comes to the tech world, you know, there's, you know, Microsoft and Apple and Wii and all those kinds of things. I mean, technology is a big part of Kevin and Kel, but it's never like, you know, like right. floating point stuff, you know.
Right, right. You don't ever dereference null pointers in your...
No.
Bill doesn't do that. So, does he know what a null pointer is?
Probably not. Yeah. But he loves technology. He uses technology in his other comic strip on the Fast Track, too, where it was originally started out being a comic strip about the office culture, but then it really kind of ended up being more about the computers and technology they use in offices.
Hey, even Doonesbury's Twittering now. So, I mean, you know, it's all technology's coming to the comics no matter what.
I think it's just it's a change in our society.
Yeah. So is this a full-time job for you, Jeffrey? Is it a full-time job for you, Chris Wright? I mean, is this something, you guys make a, Chris Wright, is this something you make a living at these days?
Well, I don't make any money off of it. But
so I guess it wouldn't be a very good full-time job then.
But that said, I do spend an awful lot of time thinking about it, obsessing over it, trying to figure out what I want to say about it. I mean, I think of myself as sort of an internet pamphleteer in that I'm using help desk to comment on things that are going on.
So your payoff is really having a voice.
Right. So, you know, I do spend an awful lot of time looking for material and making decisions about what I'm going to use and what I'm not going to use. I don't actually spend a whole lot of time drawing it because I'm a terrible artist. So I take all of these clip art figures that I created a long time ago and I just paste them up there and move them around. But I do spend an awful lot of time trying to actually figure out what these... you know, cardboard cutout figures are going to do.
I do enjoy the old school web comic that you did, which was about as simple a drawing. You've got circles and squares.
With letters,
With letters. It's pretty, it's minimalist.
I think that's one of the great things about web comics, though, is that, you know, before web comics had happened, there was a real barrier to entry to having new work published in newspapers. Comic editors and newspapers were really specific about the artwork they wanted to see. And you might not make it in the comic strip industry, but when, you know, the internet came along and people could self-publish and they didn't get editorized, you know, it opened the floodgates for new comic material and it broke that mold.
Yeah.
Because now you see stuff like, you know, XKCD, which is stick figures, and it's one of the most popular web comics out there, or Dinosaur Comics, which is just clip art of dinosaurs, and it's still huge because it broke that mold.
There's even websites where you can create your own comics that way, too, where you can just go in and not even have to have any skill whatsoever. I forget what the names of them are, but I've seen these before, where you just kind of draw your own squares and put your own text there, and you're done.
So, but it's really, but it's, this makes sense, more about having something to say, or at least having a joke, than it is about anything else. Is that, would you say that, Jeff?
Yeah, my whole motivation for GPF is to tell a story, to entertain people. Mm-hmm. Whether it has to be, you know, anything science fiction-y, or if it's a little bit of drama, or just telling Linux jokes or Microsoft jokes, to me, I just want to entertain people. I want to make people laugh. I want to make people cry. I want to make people think about themselves and how they relate to other people.
Is this a business for you at this point?
GPF is a business and profitable if you consider it is it has zero employees.
In other words, you don't get a paycheck.
Now, I actually have a day job. I work for a defense contractor.
But you doing, you have ads on here, and I mean,
yeah, GPF is primarily ad supported, and I get about maybe 75% ad revenue, and then maybe 25% of my revenue comes from premium subscriptions, where I sell a service where people who subscribe get bonus stuff. They get bigger resolution comics. They get author's notes. They get an extra sketchbook. Just added bonus on top of things. Plus, get rid of all those annoying ads so you don't have to, you know, see the Rachel Ray diet ads in your face.
Do you guys sell merchandise and things? Like a lot of, and over the webcomics that making enough money for somebody to do it full time. And they do it through selling merchandise and things like that. Is that what you guys do as well?
Yeah, I've got t-shirts like my Subliminal Pearl t-shirt here. I sent one to Randall, but unfortunately it didn't arrive in time.
I wanted Randall to
wear it next week.
I want Randall to translate for us.
And I do have my my plush Fred the sentient slime mold with me. So
you are trying to make a living out of this, Jeff. I mean, you'd like to quit your day job.
I would love to be able to quit my day job. No offense if my boss just happens to be listening.
No, we appreciate the work you're doing for the defense contractor, but everybody has a dream, so your dream would be to be a cartoonist full time.
I would love to be a cartoonist, be a writer, screenwriter, be completely creative. But you know, realistically, you know, it makes money. It doesn't make a whole lot of money, and the number of actual web cartoonists who make a living off of their work is actually very, very small compared to the rest of the population. The vast majority of web cartoonists are probably hobbyists. They're never really looking to make any kind of money off of it. They just want to create and entertain.
Yeah. I think NitroZack and Snaggy, the Joy of Tech guys, that's their full-time job, but they do a lot of merchandising. They do, a lot of side stuff.
The web cartoonists that I'm aware of who are actually able to support themselves do so mostly by making sure that their audience is kept up to date of the books that they're releasing. They have other kinds of merchandise. They go to comic conventions where they set up booths. You know, they really have to basically do a circuit where they go and they meet with their fans and they make sure that the things they have to sell are accessible all the time to people who want to buy them. And there are people who do that very well. I mean, obviously, PvP is an excellent example of that.
Scott
Penny
Kurtz.
Arcade is an excellent example of that.
Yep.
But there are even comics that it's possible for cartoonists to support themselves even without that level of success. You just need to have an accessible fan base for it.
Yeah, I hate to focus so much on money. In fact, I apologize for doing that. But it's just curious on how this works logistically for you, because there certainly are costs to doing this. You have to run a server
I mean, the number of webcomics people out there actually who that's their only job. We were talking about that when the three of us were just talking online last Saturday or Sunday, and it's a pretty small handful of people who can really be super successful at it. You know, Bill is lucky that he's got three. You know, and two of them are King Features Syndicate comics, and you know, that's his only job. And so, yes, he does make a living doing Kevin and Kel, if you count his other two.
Well, Nessie, I'm curious. I mean, obviously, he's got a staff. He's got you. It must be important to him to have this web presence as well, because he doesn't need to.
Yeah, yeah, it's a really interesting story with Bill, because not only was he kind of out there early on before other people had really caught on to doing webcomics, but he already was established. He already had relationships with King Features. He had two successful comic strips. They're still in production today. And he just sort of saw it as a new opportunity, a new audience. So he built Kevin and Kel to just sort of see what he could do with it. And it turned out to be, you know, work. It worked. And so he does have to do just like what Chris said. You know, he has to go around to various conventions throughout the year, you know, make sure he connects with his readers. You've got to really build the kind of readership loyalty if you're going to be successful. And I don't think he could do Kevin Kell on its own. It doesn't have quite the readership as some of those really top tier webcomics do, where the advertising alone would do it.
Right.
He really needs to do it along with his other two. But the fans are really what keep it alive.
You know, I'm curious. We're seeing all this news about newspapers dying, people getting their news from the web. And I would imagine if you're a comic artist working in newspapers, that you'd have to be thinking, gee, I wonder what happens to me if the newspaper dies. And it would make sense for somebody like Bill to say, maybe I ought to have a presence on the web, at least as to have a foot in the door for the future.
Yeah, I don't think he set out to do that. Obviously, you know, 14 years ago, there wasn't a lot of talk about newspapers dying out. But I have to think that he's excited about
that.
He's
glad he did it now. Yeah, he's glad he did it now, I would imagine.
Oh, I'm sure he is. And yeah. I mean, he still has big success with his other two comics. I think Safe Havens is in about 30 papers and Fast Track's about 50. But, you know, got to have all three for him to really put meat on the table.
Well, I liken it to myself. You know, I support myself with a mainstream media job doing a radio show. But I would be foolish to say that's the future. And I think if you're a cartoonist, you'd be foolish to say, oh, well, there'll always be newspapers. There'll always be a King Features syndicate. I don't think that's a safe bet at all.
No, it strikes me that, you know, for each of the part-time webcomic artists that, you know, obviously you're spending a lot of your time with your day job and spending time away from doing the webcomics. So surely it would be possible to kind of use that time to produce even more content and then maybe use that, use that for some kind of subscription service. So I was just thinking, like, you know, people, I could imagine this kind of content being delivered on, like, on the Kindle as one such example.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
You know, so then you give your webcomic away, the one that you've been doing, you know, you give that away and that doesn't change because that's what people know and love, but then maybe do another comic or produce additional content that will encourage people to pay for it. And maybe that would be a great way of doing it.
Well, John,
it's really hard to get people to pay for comic strips, particularly web comics. There's certainly been no lack of effort in trying to do that, but we found that, you know, there's a real barrier to get people to start reading their comic strip. And if
even if
we had, like, you know, we've talked about it in the past, Bill and I, talking about, you know, maybe we could leave the last several months of comics available for free and maybe the old stuff would be archived. But even that's not a great idea in the long run, because what we found is that if you want to build a reader base, what you do is you make your whole archives available. And we've had this happen where people they'll kind of get hooked a little bit at the very beginning, and then they'll go back, start reading, and spend the entire weekend just reading 4,000 comic strips.
Yeah,
and then suddenly they're a big fan.
That's what you said you were doing, Randall, when we started. You said, I just read 3,000 comics.
Well, yeah, it's the same thing. Every time I've discovered a new webcomic, I've gone back to the beginning and just started reading it from the beginning.
Right,
and it's
right.
I know Iliad was on one of the geek cruises we had, and he's talked about that same phenomenon. He said one of the reasons we produce the hard copy books is to prevent people from burning his server up.
Oh, that's right, because everybody who goes back uses resources. Yeah. I didn't think of that.
Yeah. Jeffrey, you want to say what you were preparing for this week?
Well, I actually bumped my server plan up to make sure that the Twit Army didn't trash my servers.
Oh, they would never all go to gpf-comics.com at the same time, would they? Oh, I don't think so, because if they all went to gpf-comics.com at the same time, your bill would go through the roof.
Well, I've got plenty of bandwidth.
Good.
I'm just worried about, you know, the whole RAM issue, running out of memory.
You know, it's funny that this came up, because earlier this week, Kevin, Google Reader added a bundles feature where you could put together a bundle of stuff that you follow. And Kevin Marks, who was at Google and is a very smart guy, had a bundle of comics, of web comics. And so I can now go to my Google Reader and read a series of web comics. Some of them are, you know, like Dilbert are mainstream, and some of them QC are, you know, absolutely web, XKCD, of course. And I'm curious, do you guys all do RSS feeds? Jeff, do you do an RSS feed of your comic? Could I subscribe on my Google Reader?
Well, yeah, there's an RSS feed, but usually I like to prefer to the people actually come to the
site. You want
site
them to go to your site.
Then I get the ad views, and right. then I pay for the bandwidth.
I understand. So. Yeah. Chris Wright, how about you? Do you do an RSS feed?
I do an RSS feed, and it's always been my intention to have the images viewable. Unfortunately, there seems to be some sort of technical problem with the plugin I'm using on Drupal. And on Google Reader, you can actually see the images, but on other readers, for some reason, you only see a little thumbnail of the images, which is really aggravating. It sort of defeats the whole purpose,
yeah.
I think.
So you don't mind people looking in an aggregator? You just assume people...
No, I don't mind at all. I figure that if someone actually likes the comic, eventually they'll come around to the site.
Right. Right. That makes sense. How about you, Chris Kohler? Have you set that up for Bill? First of all, did Bill know to ask for it? And second of all,
no, he did. He asked for it, and well, he wasn't really asking for it. He asked me, "Do you think this would be a good idea?" We discussed it. You know, I think it ultimately came back to the fact that we wanted. At the time, he had asked for. You know, we were still getting a lot of revenue from Ad Banner, so it was the same situation with Jeff, where we didn't want to take eyes off those ads. And we also have people who sponsor the comic strip, readers who will even sponsor a daily comic and things like that. We didn't want that, so we did make an RSS reader or feed, excuse me, and it does have, you know, the latest title of the comic strip in it and things like that. But we don't put the comic in there because of that reason, and also because we feel like it's important that the homepage be the place where readers go, because that's also the channel of communication between the author and the readers. So if there's events that he's going to be going to, or, you know, contests and things like that.
Right, right. I tell you, it's a real nice thing to have in your aggregator, to have a whole bunch of comics. Yeah. But in the long run, I could see why you'd want people, both of you, would want people to come to the website where you monetize.
Yeah, intellectual property is a bit of a touchy subject with web comics people sometimes, because you know, it's so easy to inline comics, and then, you know, people can reproduce your work without, you know, getting your permission.
Yeah, I mean, with the rise of Tumblr and places like that, where people very easily can embed a comic, that's interesting. So that's something you think about, Chris. That's something you try to do. You actively try to block people from doing.
No, I don't. We don't actively try to block it, because I don't think there's a technical way to do it. I mean, right. It's kind of like, you know, music. If it plays through your sound card, you can capture it.
Right.
And if it's on your screen, you can capture it. And, you know, we don't go through a lot to try to make that stop. But, you know, there was a time early on in the comic strip history, back I think in the late 90s, where there was a guy out in California who was. Who had built a website that literally sucked in comics, even syndicated ones, off of other people's websites.
I remember that.
And ate up their bandwidth and everything. Yeah. And, you know, Bill wrote a letter to this guy and said, please don't do this. The guy said, you know, F you or whatever. And he had to write back and say, please, please, this is why this is hurting me. And eventually I think he had to get a lawyer to right. send him a cease and desist, and it ended. Another funny one, though, is when Bill was at a con one time, and he got an email that said that his comic strip had appeared in Playboy, and he had no idea that this had happened. And so his comic strip publisher goes to the guy who was producing the comic books at the time, goes downstairs to the lobby of the hotel, brings back it out, and sure enough, there's a Kevin and Kel comic strip had been printed in Playboy. And, you know, this is, you know, Bill's like, you know, what happened here? And ends up contacting the guy at Playboy, the comics editor, and, you know, Playboy, you know, treats comics very seriously, because
sure.
it's been a part of their magazine for a long time. And turned out that they had accidentally used it, because another guy who had a website had had permission to reprint one of Bill's comics about computer viruses or something.
Right.
And ended up very cordially offering Bill the
sure,
standard
you got a check.
Comic
yeah.
strip
yeah.
fee for
yeah.
doing that. And everything was okay.
Worked out great,
point.
Yeah.
But you've got to protect your IP sometimes.
Well, Chris Wright, that's you use Creative Commons, so I'm sure you want people to embed, right?
Well, I don't mind if they do. I mean,
you don't want them to, though.
The whole point of the Creative Commons license is the specific one that I use lets people do pretty much anything, as long as they give attribution and they don't use it commercially.
Yeah.
And I like the Creative Commons idea for distributing. It seems like a good answer to open source licenses like the GPL and other such things, more tailored towards artistic media. And so I wanted to support it. And you know, I always kind of get a kick when I see the comic sitting in somewhere else. So I figured I might as well give them permission to do so.
Right.
Hey, so given that your work is out there and it's not a non-derivative license, have you seen fanfic from this stuff? Have people taken these characters and done other things with them?
I actually had someone specifically ask my permission to be able to write fanfic for one of my characters.
Wow.
I parody the Microsoft paperclip. Binky, the cheerful winking paperclip, is a character in my comic. And someone wanted to know if it would be all right to use that in fanfic, and my response was, sure, go ahead, but I don't think I want to read it. Because the thought of Binky appearing in any kind of fanfic sort of scares me, where it would lead.
As it should. You know, it's funny, Randall, because I'm pretty sure it's a very, I think I remember this, a very common exercise in Perl to write a scraper. And frequently it is to scrape a comic and put it on your page.
I can't even think of whether my third column I wrote had that in it or not.
It seems like it probably did. I mean, it's the kind of thing that you do. You're using Curl.
I believe it was Dilbert.
Dilbert.
I had to change the name from Dilbert to Gilbert in the script. Yes,
and you're responsible.
Interestingly enough, the moment I published that script, because the URLs, except for changing Gilbert back to Dilbert, actually worked. Within a month, the website changed, so my script didn't work, and they never changed since then. So they saw the script and saw all the hits, and immediately went away.
I remember typing that in.
Yep.
I have a quick question. I mean, I noticed that the non-commercial clause has been used, and the Creative Commons, a lot of the people from the Creative Commons don't particularly like people to use the non-commercial clause because they prefer that, you know, people can share the content in commercial settings as well. Is there a strong reason why you guys have in some cases picked the non-commercial clause when it sounds like you're not really making much money from it anyway?
There's a reason why I have, which is that I spend a fair amount of time bashing companies, and I wouldn't want to see any of my characters used in their ads.
That's a good point.
But here's the thing. I mean, there's no particular reason why they would. There's no reason why Microsoft would say, hey, it would be a really good idea to feature Help Desk in this, because I'm not that big a comic. But artists are by nature paranoid, and so my natural paranoia says, well, if someday I actually, you know, were to be popular, I wouldn't want to see the Dark Lord of Ubersoft featured in a Nike commercial.
Yeah. Right, gotcha. But and on that topic, have you had run-ins with companies? Have you really pissed some companies off and they've come after you, and either in a legal sense or in just a mean-spirited sense?
Unfortunately not. It would be great.
You hope they will. Had,
but, awesome content, yeah.
I am told that there are people at Microsoft who are fans of my comic, which I think is kind of a kick. But I have never... Oh, and there was one situation where I was given a cease and desist by a lawyer, but that wasn't for my comic. I had created a parody of Slashdot where I happened to mention books on tape, and books on tape is a trademarked phrase, so I was given a cease and desist for that.
Right.
But that can happen to anybody.
Yeah, so nothing really exciting, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
And Chris, what's your stance on, you know, you said you sometimes must bash Microsoft if you're talking about a Clippy parody and things like that. What's your stance on open source versus commercial software and all that sort of arena?
And just remember the name of this show.
That's right. And the deal has the dump button right there.
Yeah, it's just
I am a huge supporter of open source free software. I use Kubuntu as my primary machine. I use all free source software to create my comic. I use Inkscape and I use the GIMP. I guess it's just called GIMP now because they were afraid of all the sexual bondage references. And
wait a minute, what?
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 No, those references are now known as Photoshop.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't Google GIMP, whatever you do.
But I'm a huge I'm a I'm a huge supporter of it, both practically and ideologically. I think it's a great idea because one of the things that I really remember is reading something that Stallman had written about why he created GNU. He saw the development environment he was accustomed to being destroyed by commercial interests who would look at what they were doing, tweak it a little bit and sell it, and then not show them what those changes were. So they would be basically just taking stuff out of a community, chopping it up piecemeal and watching it go away, and he had no control over it. So that resonated with me because as an OS2 user, we all supported this great operating system that IBM just killed and there was nothing we could do about it. I think that that's a very vibrant community. And you know, on a practical level, I don't have to pay a dollar for any of all I had to pay for was the cost of the hardware that I run it on. And so I didn't have to pay $800 for Photoshop or Illustrator or anything like that. And so I have, you know, there was really no huge investment that I had to put into creating anything.
And yet you still got nice gradients in the background. Those are cool.
Yes. Gradients, that's the only nice part of, that's the only visual good part of my comic, I guess.
That's pretty cool. Chris Kohler, do you use any sort of open source software in produce or publishing Kevin and Kel?
Not on the art side. Bill does use Photoshop, and we have some colorists, Terrence and Isabel Marks, who are also some web cartoonists, and they use Photoshop to color the actual artwork. Bill does all the drawing by hand and inks it by hand and letters by hand, just like he does his print ones. But I do use LAMP on the web server, so I've got Fedora Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. And when I first started doing the website, it was all static. I was early in my career as a web developer. I was really more of a web designer when I started, and so I was using Photoshop and PaintShop Pro to design websites, and I'd build them and turn them into HTML and CSS and stuff. But I wasn't really what I had called a back-end programmer yet. I hadn't really learned that stuff, and I wanted to, once the archive to Kevin and Kel had grown to be like, you know, 2,000 comics, it started to get a little ridiculous to go back into 2,000 HTML files and try to update them regularly if I had to make a change. And so I was working at the time at a place that had they were a big Perl house. You'd like them, Randall. They were using Perl for everything. They loved it. And so that's what I first tried to use. I ended up picking up a particular book here called
Heard of that.
Perl. Oh, yeah. Living Perl. Yay.
That's got a really good script in it for stealing Dilbert comics, I think.
Tried that at first, but this was really early on. I wasn't big into programming yet, and I hadn't really had the appetite for it, and got a bit into the book, and you know, I just couldn't get my head wrapped around it at that time. Put it off, waited a couple more years, then finally was ready to go back and try learning some more stuff about programming. And at the time, I think I had heard some more about PHP and ended up going down that route.
Mm-hmm. So
I'll use jQuery as well on the website, which is open source.
I love jQuery. Yeah, we had Resegg on the show the other day.
Yes,
it was amazing. I didn't know he was so famous. Now I know.
And Jeffrey, you use open source software all the way down, right?
Not all the way. It is my long-term goal to do GPF start to finish completely with open source stuff. I couple of little holdouts here, like the software that I actually use to do my image editing is this ancient, decrepit copy of PaintShop Pro. But in the archive system that I use is something I wrote myself, and I'm just so embarrassed of the code, I haven't released it as open source, but that's also a long-term goal.
That's neat that you write your own code for it. That's fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of different pieces of software out there, including open source things that are available, such as some plugins for WordPress and stuff like that, to where you could build an entire webcomic website with open source software. Me, I looked at all the options available and realized I want very specific requirements that I have to do, and there's nobody better suited to fixing or fitting my requirements than me, so I built the entire thing from scratch, from the ground up. The advantage being is that I could optimize the heck out of the thing to where you go to the site and you probably couldn't tell it was database driven and completely dynamic. But it also lets me do things with, say, that subscription system that I was talking about, my premium service. You can completely customize and change parts of the site based on that. But the site is LAMP. I use MediaWiki for the wiki and PHPBB for the forum. Randall will probably be happy to hear that all but two of my cron jobs are written in Perl.
What about those other two? Can you work on that?
Oh, well, those other two, the whole reason that they're written in PHP is code reuse, which Larry Wall, the three virtues of a programmer, one of which is laziness. So I had to reuse code. But
the right kind of laziness too. Yes.
But yeah, it is my long-term goal to be completely 100% open source. I think I'm almost there. I've been doing a lot of experimentation with replacing PaintShop Pro with Inkscape, and which has the added benefit of being completely vectorized. So you can resize it to any size that you need.
But can it generate those necessary fractals right in place? You used a lot of fractals early on. That's what I remember.
Well, really? Yeah, funny about that, you know, there was a whole story in GPF where one of the main characters, crackpot inventor Uncle, created the Fractal Explorer. So there was a whole bunch of Mandelbrot set fractals. And actually, that program that was used to create that was something... create those fractals I wrote myself. And actually, if you poke around on the GPF site, you can actually find the descendants of that program that are on my site. They are open. I've released them under GPL. There's a Java version. There's a .NET C# version. So if you wanted to, you could play with those if you wanted.
I also noticed that you weren't particularly fond of doing a timely Y2K story, since your script has been around since then. Do you want to talk about your stance on Y2K and that fourth wall that you broke through there?
Well, to put things kind of in perspective, at the time I was an IBMer. I was working for IBM Global Services and on a customer site. And so we were doing what everybody else was doing at the time, looking at all of our code, going through it bit by bit. And at that point, it had just been pounded and pounded and pounded into us on how to do everything. Of course, all my code was written perfectly on the spot. But all the libraries and the package software that I had to work with, you know, that all had two character dates, so I had to do the whole sliding century stuff. But I had gotten so sick and tired of it that I just kind of said, that's it. I need therapy. So that entire Y2K story arc, especially there's a little prologue at the beginning where I actually insert myself into the strip and the characters start protesting. Why are you doing a Y2K story? Nobody wants to read about Y2K.
I enjoyed that part the best. That was actually pretty cool. Chris Wright, have you ever inserted yourself into a story?
Well, I once created an entire storyline about my attempt to get a printer to work with my then Linux machine. It failed horribly, and it resulted in every other machine that was on my network also dying, except for the Windows machine. So I decided to inflict that on one of the characters in the comic, Mark, who, like me, is a technical writer. And it was one of my most popular storylines at the time. And so I announced it at the beginning that because the cartoonist had a bad few weeks, he was going to do it. He was going to do the same thing to a character.
Wow. So you have broken fourth wall then, and have you done that anywhere else in your strip?
I love breaking the fourth wall. Breaking the fourth wall is I know there's this community within webcomics that thinks that breaking the fourth wall is cheap and lazy, and those might be two of the reasons why I like it so much.
Now you've done some crossovers with did you do crossover with GPF? I forget.
one crossover that I've only ever done one crossover, and it was with Jeff.
And how does that work? How do you guys coordinate on that and come up with the idea to do that?
We met at a diner, actually. We were both living in North Carolina.
Steak and Shake. Steak and Shake.
Steak and Shake. That's not a diner. That's just God's gift to mankind.
And so we just met and ordered lunch and hashed it out. He drew all of my characters in under 10 seconds, and I've hated him ever since.
I could do that.
I love you too, man.
The little dots. I could do that. I could do that. I could do that.
Yeah, now, the good thing about a crossover in the webcomics world is that I don't have to worry that my local newspaper isn't carrying the other half of that. Has that made it an advantage?
Yeah, I would say it's an advantage. I mean, Bill can't cross over his Kevin and Kel comic strip with his two Skink Feature Syndicates, or he could lose his IP on Kevin and Kel. So
he
does have... His two King Features Syndicate comics do crossover, and that happens regularly, but it does happen. But yeah, with Kevin and Kel, if he wants to continue to solely own it, he can't do that crossover. But he has done crossovers with Jeff on General Protection Fall, and they did have a huge story arc that actually affected both comic strips' worlds and a big long story arc. Jeff could talk more about that, I think.
Jeff?
Well, we did have a nice little story arc that. Where my characters jumped universes and ended up in Bill's universe for Kevin and Kel. And crossovers are kind of a blessing and a curse, and I kind of say that in that I've have quite a few readers who get rather upset with me whenever I do a crossover because they're going, darn it, now I've got another webcomic I have to read. but that is the main reason that a lot of web cartoonists do it, is it's a kind of a way of cross-pollination. You know, back in the old days of webcomics, a lot of it was just kind of the equivalent of the blog roll today. You know, you had the links page that linked all your favorite comics, and you just kind of spidered out from there. But with a crossover, it's much more intimate because the characters are actually interacting, and you're mixing universes. You're putting totally different pieces together to make one interweaved whole. Mm-hmm. And I personally have enjoyed every crossover I've done, and I've enjoyed especially getting the new readers from all these other places. And it's just something that makes webcomics unique, because you can't, has already been said, you can't really do that with the syndicated comics, especially if one comic is carried by one newspaper but not the other comic. And with webcomics, you're just a link away. And in some cases, for example, with my crossover with Bill, we just pasted both comics on each site, so you didn't even have to necessarily go across unless you wanted to.
Wow. And how are these strips that you do crossovers with, are you already a familiar reader with them, or do you ever have to do like what I was trying to do, go back and read 2,000 strips to get it all in your head at once?
Well, me personally, I never do a crossover unless it is a strip that I am already familiar with. Of course, I had met Bill many times before. He and I have always gone to Dragon Con many times, and I've seen him at other conventions. And Chris Wright and I at one point lived almost practically a stone's throw from each other, so we could meet up at Steak and Shake. But I had been a reader of both of those comics for a good bit of time, so I was familiar with it, and that gave me a good place to think about, well, how could I fit my characters into his universe and vice versa? And in that specific example with the GPF Help Desk crossover, basically, to kind of summarize it a little bit, I don't want to take up too much time, but one of my characters accidentally gets the source code to Ubersoft's equivalent of Microsoft Windows, Nifty Doorways. And he finds out that there's a bug there's a specific flag in the code that's set bugs equal 1. And when he changes set bugs equal to 0, he recompiles it and finds out it's the most stable, best operating system ever designed. And of course, needless to say, Ubersoft can't stand this, and they sue the pants off of GPF Software, the company in my strip. So this had lasting repercussions, at least in my strip. I can't remember how much beyond the romantic angle between the Dark Lord of Ubersoft and my primary evil character, Trudy Trueheart. Chris?
Well, it was referred to occasionally, but that's
okay. I couldn't remember. But it, you know, I was able to weave that into my story arc, and that actually helped set some things in motion later down the road.
Wow, cool. Very cool. So Chris Wright, how many other strips do you read on a regular basis? You don't have to name them all, just say.
I used to read a lot. My daily trawl has reduced considerably just because all this other stuff has happened that has really eaten into my free time. But I still follow about 10 or 11 comics regularly.
Cool.
A lot was, at one point in time, I was following 40 or 45.
That's all. That,
RSS beats are your friend.
Do you? So you like that RSS? Do you worry? Do you worry about getting cross pollinated with somebody else's idea? I would worry. I don't have enough ideas that I can actually let anybody else's idea into my head because I'll think I made it up.
There is a webcomic called Mega Tokyo, and in its very early years, it was written by two people and. At one point in time, I happened to use a punchline that was very similar to one of their comics because it was based on the same parody. We were both parodying a scene in Airplane.
Oh, well, that's fair. Airplane. That's fair.
But I was inundated. Yeah, that's the one. I was inundated by fans who accused me of deliberately ripping off that comic.
Yeah.
It was a little scarring. I emailed the creators and apologized, and their response was, "Huh? What are you talking about? This is stupid."
It's from Airplane, for crying out loud.
Exactly.
Was it the line, "Have you ever seen a man naked?"
No. Does anyone speak jive?
That's good. I like that one.
In both comics, the punchline was, "Does anyone speak leet?"
Oh, that's good.
But you know, it was. I could see how the readers thought that I was ripping them off because it is. I mean, the joke is so similar just because the source material is so very specific. So that was a little scarring, and I'm always kind of worried that that will happen. But there aren't too many other comics that actually take the kind of, I guess, position or stance that I do on technology. There aren't too many comics that actually focus on the bad guys. So in that respect, I think I'm relatively safe for the moment.
Back in its earliest days, GPF was often accused as being a ripoff of J.D. Frazier's User Friendly, which I had never heard of until
you didn't know
I started getting that. And I got it. The comeuppance years later, which JD's a great guy. I know you've met him, Leo, on the screensaver.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I got my comeuppance years later when JD did a story where his characters go out for a camping trip for team building. And lots of people started accusing him of ripping off a GPF story arc that was the exact same thing that I had done several months earlier.
Somebody observed in the chat room that cross-pollinization is the... you know, kind of the cornerstone of creativity. And that's really true. You know, I mean, I was being a little facetious because you really do have to be aware of what everybody's doing. It's part of, you know, you're part of a culture and
theft is the sincerest form of flattery.
Yeah, I'm glad you feel that way because I'm about to start a new comic strip and it's going to be called Undersoft. No, I'm just
squares and circles.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. I can draw those. Hey, it's been so much fun talking to you all. I really appreciate your time, Jeff. It's, you know, I love all your comic strips. I appreciate the hard work you put into them. It's really been fantastic. So thank you for being here and sharing a little bit of what your experience has been like. Jeff Darlington is the man at gpf-comics.com. We're going to try one more time to bring that site down. You survived the onslaught, I must say. I'm impressed.
It got a little slow, but that was it.
It got a little slow, and that's all.
Give props to my web host, Slicehost.
Slicehost, yeah.
Yes, Slicehost.com.
Is that a Rackspace company? I believe it is.
It was recently purchased by Rackspace.
I believe
it's
a Rackspace.
Before they purchased it, they have great customer service, great servers. Yep. They're awesome.
Good people. Chris Kohler, thank you for being here. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. It's awesome. I'm a big Twit listener. I listen to MacBreak Weekly every week. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, great. Well, that's very nice to hear. You can steal anything from us anytime you want.
Thanks.
Also, Chris Wright, we thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And joining us on the show. Chris Wright's comic is ubersoft.net. And I forgot to mention that Chris is the webmaster for Kevin and Kelly. Is it .com?
It's Kevin and Kel.
Kel, no dot, Y, dot .com.
With two L's, dot .com, yes.
K-E-L-L.
It's a dot .com.
It's a dot .com.
Cool.
Hey, boy, it was a lot of fun. Thank you for all of you for being here. We really appreciate it. Jono, you were so quiet today.
No, part of the reason, because I don't really read webcomics,
really?
I haven't really got an awful lot to say. I mean, I was very tempted to try and turn the discussion around to me, but I thought that would be inappropriate.
you are your own webcomic.
We could do that anytime.
But yeah, we'll do that another time.
Well, you're going to have to start reading. I mean, there's, you know, what's fun is that they really much more. It's what's interesting is there is a geek culture and it is not a mainstream culture. And yeah. So often, you know, you read comics in the newspaper. It's like, who are these people? They don't reflect my life, my culture. And that's what's great about web comics is that they speak to us, you know, and it's kind of there's a little thrill of reading a comic and seeing them, you know, mention. You know, dereferencing a null pointer. It's like a, ooh, ooh,
my language,
my
yeah.
people, mine is my people. So it is, it's really fun to have that. And we're so glad that you guys all do it. Are you all going to a Comic-Con? I mean, Dragon Con, sorry.
I was planning on it, but they snubbed me this year.
Wait a minute.
Bill will be there. He's going to be there. So Randall, if you want to swing by his booth, you could say hello to him.
Oh, that's good.
I will definitely be doing that. Thank you. Definitely.
Yeah, because you're going to Dragon Con, aren't you, Randall?
I'm at Dragon Con, yeah, definitely, yeah. So it'll be great. So I'll say hi to Bill.
And Chris Wright, you're not going to Dragon Con?
No, I really can't afford to go to those things.
Yeah.
I don't have enough stuff to sell that anyone would actually want me there as a vendor. Right. So I always have to go as a fan.
Those stuffed circles, just they don't really
sell. Yeah, for some reason, there's just not a market for basic geometrical shapes. I don't understand. My time will come. Now is not that time.
The circle will not be unbroken.
That's right.
Randall, who do we have coming up on Future Flosses?
Oh, my God. It's a stellar list, as it always is. In fact, it's really weird because I keep thinking, you know, I've done these great shows recently in the past. How am I ever going to get better people on?
It's been so much fun. It's better and better and better. Yeah.
It was a new low point when we had Jono on. But otherwise, you know, it's further up since then. But, you know, we just reset the bar. Anyway, we have next week we have Eric Jung, who works with the Mozilla Project, to produce the advanced proxying software called Foxy Proxy for Firefox.
Oh, okay.
And he's going to come on and talk about Foxy Proxy, where it all came from and how it all works, but also look at the more general issue of censorship on the net, censorship on the web, how something like proxy services get around some of that.
Excellent.
Especially when we have issues like happening in China and Tehran and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it'll be really great talking about network sensitivity there. Following week, we have Angela Brown, who's going to represent LinuxCon, which is the new U.S. conference that the Linux Foundation is putting on. She's going to talk about the conference. Conference is 3 weeks later, so it'll be good timing for that. We may also get somebody from the Linux Foundation themselves. I put a feeler in for a couple of people to talk about what Linux Foundation is actually doing in the world. Next week after that, you want to talk about Paul there, Jono?
Sure, yeah. So on September the 9th, I think it is, we're going to be having Paul Davis from the Ardour project. So Ardour is a pretty comprehensive multi-track audio editor available for Linux, Mac OS X. I think it's available for Windows as well. And it's really quite a professional tool, so we're going to get him on. He's kind of like the Don of the audio open source audio world. So we're gonna it's gonna be quite a fun show to talk to him.
That's great.
And then very good, thanks, John. And then immediately after that, we're gonna have the one and only the legend Kent Beck. Kent Beck helped invent the whole idea of extreme programming, test-driven development, patterns, and all sorts of things. And he's going to be talking about us in the early days of Smalltalk and a bunch of other things going on that. And then I think Jono and I are going to be at LinuxCon, and we're going to try to get some live interviews. I'm hoping we get somebody whose name sort of sounds like Linux tagged there at the show. we might be able to do that because he will be in town since it's his home city, so that'll be really nice. But just a lot of people on the short list after that. If you can always go to twit.tv/floss and see the upcoming spreadsheet of all the people we've got coming up. If you have suggestions, make sure first they're not on that list before you send it in to me. My email contact information is there. You can also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, and see when it is I'm doing karaoke and all the other live streaming that I do. So check that out. And also, like we talked about earlier, I will be at Dragon Con. So if you happen to be in Atlanta first weekend of September and you're coming by Dragon Con, you can tweet me or text me or whatever, and I will try to make arrangements to come say hi. So there we go.
And don't forget, Jono's book is out, The Art of Community.
Complete with an excellent, excellent foreword by one Leo Laporte.
Yes, an O'Reilly book available on Amazon and better bookstores everywhere.
Indeed. Go and buy it. Make a millionaire.
Yeah. And you can tell them
you still have fantasies about that, do you, John?
I'm never going to make it. No, I'm not going to make it. Just in case anyone's thinking, you know, I'd like to buy the book, but I don't want to, you know,
enrich Jono. Oh. Okay.
No one makes money from books, so that includes me.
Yeah. No, it'll be a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Hey, everybody. Thank you all for being here. We thank all our web comics. And webmasters for webcomics, and we invite you to join us next week. We'll be back doing the show. We do it live every Wednesday at 4:30 Eastern. That's 1:30 Pacific time, which is 20:30 UTC at HT.
In the summer.
UTC in the summer.
Yes.
Yes.
It's 19:30 in the winter because you move it because of the time zone change.
Because UTC does not have summertime.
You're a clock dork.
I was just happy that I could do the calculation in my head, okay?
Yeah.
I don't have no Perl script running here, man. Anyway, catch us at live.twit.tv. Of course, you can always hear the show after the fact. We subscribe on Twitter. Twitter. Okay. Shoot me now. Subscribe on iTunes or Zune or any other of the wonderful podcast aggregators. I don't believe we're yet on Twitter. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.